With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon. Tomorrow isn't promised, so I'm ignoring predators today.
Throw me to the wolves and I'll return injured or possibly dead.
you better come through if you know what's good for you.
Aww. Oh, I love Orion. Oh my God. Aren't those some of your like favorite taglines?
Yes.
Don't you love a rhyming vibe?
Yeah.
When Mother Goose jumps out, yeah.
I always feel like when it clicks in my brain that someone's rhyming, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so smart. Like, not only is it funny, but like, look at me realizing that it rhymes.
Wow.
Yeah, the bar is low. What can I tell you, theater major? You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 239, and I am so excited to be joined by two people whose thoughts and feels about all things Housewives and more I trust implicitly, and I'm so excited to see, will they betray it tonight?
Oh my God.
Welcome to one first-timer and one alum to the People's People's Couch, the hosts of the amazing podcast Come Through Queen. Welcome, Dan Calabrese and Brendan Davis.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello. Great to be back on my end.
Oh my God, great to have you. So Dan, do you want to introduce yourself so that the listeners know who is Dan and who is Brendan?
Sure, yeah. I'm Dan. I probably have a little bit more of a lisp, so you could just differentiate us between me and Brendan. But yeah, we've been co-hosting Come Through Queen together for over 5 years now.
Jeez.
Oh my God.
And just excited to be here making my People's People's Couch debut.
Oh my God. And Brendan, we know you, but introduce yourself.
Good to be back. I'm co-hosting with Dan. I met the dame at BravoCon, and I think I've been on like a few times now.
Yeah, I think you've been on like two or three times, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe more.
Three, I think, yeah.
And Dan, I don't know if you know this, but Brendan saved my life because at a certain point in BravoCon, it was either the maybe it was the last day, I forget. My body just shut down because I was talking to so many people and I was doing this, like, doing some corresponding work or whatever, and I just could not speak anymore. I actually felt like I was frozen in time. My body, like, it was like a form of trauma or something. I, like, couldn't do it. So Brendan very graciously and generously stepped in with some of the filming stuff that I had just to, like, help me behind the scenes. Because I truly, you saw me, I was like, I couldn't, I truly couldn't go on. It was an intense couple days.
It was fun. I like helping out. I like approaching people and asking them to do things. So it was fun.
Same. As do I. When I was like, Brendan, please do this for me. Thank you so much.
How are you feeling about BravoCon right now?
I am amazed at the number of content creators who have asked me but I know that we're all doing this with each other. Like, have you heard anything? And listeners have asked me. I have not heard a single thing. And I have to say that, you know, there was a lot of, you know, how is this going to go the first go around? And anyone who had any question about the quality of the event were roundly, understandably so, but they were absolutely incorrect when it came to the precision of the weekend and how fun it was and everything else. And this go around, you know, people are asking when are tickets going on sale, understandably, because the event is scheduled for October. We're now in August and people need to buy their flights and hotels. I don't know. My assumption is that tickets or an itinerary or something will be announced soon, but I don't know how, you know, Lady Delta is going to impact all of this, and if that is a reason why there's been some delays, what do you guys think?
Well, I think they just started tweeting and emailing about if you're a Bravo insider, like, you can get tickets first or something.
Right.
But I'm just more thinking of it in terms of the ever-changing world we live in, because 2 months ago, I'm like, oh, yeah, this makes sense. I could see this happening. But now things are shifting a little bit where it's like, I wonder how much this does make sense.
I feel like a lot of people are pretending Delta is not happening and just going on their merry way. And I wonder if Bravo's doing that or not. I would assume no, but we'll see. Dan, you need to get there if it is happening.
Yeah, I will somehow, some way. Yeah.
Wait, would you both go? Why, Brendan, why are you saying for Dan to definitely go?
Oh, because he wasn't there last year. So, I mean, yeah.
Got it. Yeah. He was there in 2019. Okay, got it. I mean, I think a part of the probably some confusion of it, not to say that there's any confusion going on at like HQ, but just in the world at large, is like, how do you plan any kind of convention-esque gathering when there's travel involved, when the majority of the talent does, or a great majority of the talent rather, doesn't live in New York or the New York area? Like, how do you even book that travel when there's so much we don't know? Like, what happens if a full cast is in the middle of filming, which would never, that would, you know, ostensibly pre-COVID be a no big deal situation, and then the night before, God forbid, someone, you know, has to quarantine, and then the cast quarantine, like, does that mean the whole franchise is out? There are so many questions. We really don't know.
Yeah.
I thought we were finally to like a good space as far as like them streamlining all of this stuff, but now Miss Delta said, surprise, bitch.
Yeah. And it's like everything that I read every day is drastically different from the day before. And sometimes you have that like leftover information of, okay, well, because I'm vaccinated, like, oh, it says it's, I'm not, I can't even get it because I have Moderna. I have like the best one. And then however many, whatever days or news cycles later, it's like JK. And it doesn't mean that the data wasn't wrong at the time. It just means that this is new science and the data is constantly changing based on stats that are ever changing and ever evolving as the virus changes and evolves and mutates and whatever else. It's just a really, I can't imagine it from an event perspective, just trying to coordinate something like this. It just has, on the best of days, it is a monster kind of event. It's just, there's so many variables. They really, I mean, Brendan, you can speak to this. I just really thought they did such a fantastic job in 2019. And I cannot imagine the stress of trying to figure something out now. And also, like, COVID testing?
Right.
Or, because now we know getting vaccinated, you know, you can be asymptomatic. But it doesn't, you know, there's just a lot going on. I don't know what the minimum is for them to ask of people attending.
All I know is I am happy that it is not my job to figure that out.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm an event producer by trade, and I just can't. I actually sort of feel the stress in my bones when I talk about it, because I've worked on incredibly difficult, stressful events in ones with celebrities or notables, whatever. And this is just like, you just throw in the pandemic where, you know, I've never really had to worry about like my personal safety when it comes to like health. And this is just like scary.
Yeah. I wonder if Bravo is going to move to like a more outside model with as many events as possible. Cause it is October. So it's still relatively nice in New York City. And Andy Cohen is besties with Barry Diller, who owns the Little Island or whatever that just opened. So maybe BravoCon goes to Little Islands, that new park on the
mushroom
west side.
It's like a mushroom garden. It looks so fucking weird. I haven't been yet because it just looks so odd to me.
I know.
Yeah.
It's an odd looking little guy.
Yeah.
It's a weird I just look at it. I'm like, oh, it's like a mushroom cloud that cost $1,000,000,000.
I know.
And God bless. But who doesn't want a mushroom park? Honestly, it's what we need right now. It's for our spirit, for our journey. So, guys, I have to ask, what was the impetus for Come Through Queen 5+ years ago? How did you guys decide? You know, were you friends prior? Was it an ongoing conversation? How did you guys decide to like ladder up and make your conversations about Housewives into a pod?
Go ahead, Dan. I think you can start.
So we had talked about it for a while. I think at the time I was more of a podcast listener than Brendan was. And we knew it was going to be Housewives focus with dabbling into pop culture. Cause we talk about like other things, musicians here and there, The View, Big Brother, Drag Race. So we do a lot of things there, but it's mostly Bravo and Housewives focused. And I think we wanted to line it up with when Roni was premiering. So we waited for a season premiere of that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we kind of just like took off from there, started with like cheap, junky equipment. Our first few episodes definitely sound like we're recording in a fishbowl.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been doing it since then pretty much every week. We take like maybe two weeks off a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we were getting to the point in our friendship where we just as a social event, like to hang out, would be like, let's get together and rank all of the Housewives of all time. And having cocktails and sitting at my apartment and like putting post-it notes on the wall, them literally. Like for no one but us.
Yeah.
And actually on our Patreon, we've now embarked on a larger project where we're going franchise to franchise and laddering up to what eventually will be like a master ranking and having very interesting and sometimes contentious conversations while doing so. So
yeah,
it's been fun.
Do you remember who your top five was then back in the day?
Ooh, it's tough, but I'm guessing it was like some combination of like Lisa Vanderpump,
yep,
Ramona, Nene, Bethany, and like probably at that point Caroline Manzo, but like
wow.
Tough to remember back that era.
Yeah.
And you're working your way through another master ranking now. Do you imagine that those ladies will change, that whomever is at the top, it's going to be relatively different from that?
Well, Potomac and Dallas didn't even exist when we originally did it. So, and I think Potomac is going to be a strong representation near the top.
Yeah, I texted Dan the other day, not to like ruin or expose what our final thing will be, but I was like, I wonder if we're at a point where it's like, we're fighting between Karen and Giselle as top two of all time.
No.
My troll brain thinks maybe wow. So.
Shut up. Tell me about that, because you just mentioned you mentioned historically important figures
right.
in Housewives. You
sure.
mentioned Lisa Vanderpump. I was surprised by Caroline, but I'm very mm-hmm. into it. I think you mentioned Bethany.
Mm-hmm.
What about both Karen and Giselle make them the very, very top of the top tier Housewives for you?
Well, Potomac is an anomaly because how many people do we still have with us who started on the first season? I think it's more than any other Housewives franchise. They're all so good at their job. Karen and Giselle, the way that they spar and yet keep it fun and interesting to this day after so many seasons makes them so good in my brain, though. We've discussed this on our podcast, but I'm a little worried that it might be going a little too far this season, but we'll see. I just think they're so good. Giselle, I know that most people love Karen so much, but I've always been Giselle's number one fan since she came onto the TV. I just think she's so, so wonderful.
Yeah.
People hate her, and I don't understand it. I think she's so good at this, and you can be like, well, she's duplicitous or she's doing this for whatever and she's, you know, saying stuff she should or whatever machinations, you know, are going on. I just think she's also so great at being a housewife.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't that matter the value that someone brings right now? It's such a weird quasi-like ability contest online. It actually does not make sense to me.
I mean, she does such a good job of walking the fine line of being shady and messy, but not going overboard where it's like you're going into really bad territory and like going too far. And then also, well, this is what we're worried about. Like, we want them to be able to be in the same room, Karen and Giselle. And I thought this week with the pajama party, I'm glad that we showed up in the same room. We actually talked to each other, even though we're not on good terms. So I think like they know how to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
I also think like the women on Potomac want to keep their jobs and they understand the job requirements. And I cannot see any of those women saying, I'm not going to show up if so-and-so is filming. The only exception, which is understandable, is after the altercation last season.
Yeah.
Obviously, the idea of Candace and Monique filming together, it just would have been there was just too much that had happened.
Yeah.
And I actually don't blame either of them for that. I just think this situation was incredibly toxic.
Mm-hmm.
But with Karen and Giselle this year, I mean, Brendan, what you just mentioned of like the they're towing that line of maybe going too far. There are moments where I'm watching the episodes right now and I'm like, oh, they might truly. I don't know that they will be able to get back to the like frenemies of it all, because it does seem to be going very left. And then the trailer for next week came out, which ended with, please correct me on this, but something along the lines of like Karen being like, the Ray stuff was too long. Mm-hmm. When, your Ray stuff went too far. And Giselle's response was like, I want him to live and pay his taxes. And I was like, Karen may not find that funny, but I am laughing my ass off.
Yeah. And I think Karen in particular is really self-aware of this. She was on Watch What Happens Live, I think maybe after the premiere or recently. Mm-hmm. And she talked about how important it is for to be successful on the show. Her and Giselle are in this frenemy space where we're like never going too far. So I think she's aware, and I hope Giselle's aware and doesn't go too far.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think the Wendy factor is going to affect that? Because allegedly, mm-hmm. you know, Giselle is going to bring up a rumor that either was pulled out of an ass or existed, but she's doing it specifically to discuss it on camera. Do you think that will have an impact on Giselle and Karen's dynamic as far as line crossing?
I feel like these women are good at keeping things separate as far as mm-hmm. like they're not taking sides in the way that we're seeing on other like series or franchise. Like there's no like two clear sides or anything mm-hmm. like that. It's everyone's relationship is a little more fluid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sarah, did you see, I don't know which account posted this, but someone pulled from the original season trailer, Giselle talking about the Eddie rumors to Ashley. And that was from the scene where they were having the lemon pound cake in the coffee shop.
Iconic but they, pound cake.
But that did not air during that episode.
Is this going to be like, and not to like discount it to the level of New York, but is that going to be like the scene where Dorinda is like drunkenly yelling at someone over the phone and we never actually saw it happen? We never actually saw that moment take place during the episode, but it was like an enormous part of the trailer and our expectations for the season. What do we think? Because we know it's going to come up.
Yeah. Right? I can't imagine that the Eddie rumors storyline is just going to go in the garbage altogether. Right. Maybe they're saving it and going to roll it out in some funny way like they did with the Denise thing where mm-hmm. like Bravo, Bravo, Bravo didn't happen. And we were like, where the fuck is Bravo, Bravo, Bravo?
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. But like kudos to whoever noticed that was in the trailer and then that scene aired without that moment.
It's funny that scene became all about the pound cake and not about what was actually going to be the really explosive thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that pound cake was really fascinating. Yeah. I was like, why isn't it falling down? It's just like fully upright. It's just living its true best life because it knows it's on Potomac. Yeah. Had that been on New York, it would be mashed. Like it could not sustain itself, not for a single second. Someone get it a knife. Oh. You know? But on Potomac it's living its illustrious dream. You know, speaking of illustrious dreams, some new faces on Potomac this season. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on the Mia of it all? The energy of Mia?
I think I'm enjoying Mia so far. I do wish I was kind of on team Giselle and Robin during like the texting thing, the mm-hmm. texting exchange. I didn't get why she was like so intense so early. Mm-hmm. But so far, I mean, she's adding something to the season, and I like that she's doing that.
Yeah. I like how with Mia, she's the CEO, but then this episode, she was the regional director. Like,
I know.
What are we? Is she going to be like the secretary next week?
There's something odd about that the business boss of it all. Mm-hmm. And I don't know quite what it is, but I want more of a breakdown. And I started to wonder to myself, like, you know, when Jill Zarin first started on New York, she was a part of the Zarin Fabrics empire. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. we always associated Zarin, or many of us associated Zarin Fabrics with Bobby Zarin's wealth. But that's not, it was like a family, it was like the trinket to him. It was a family business. It's not actually where mm-hmm. his wealth came from, which I think was in real estate.
Yeah.
And right. maybe some other business ventures. And I look at the massage chain, which is seemingly obviously much more lucrative than like the one than Zarin Fabrics, which, you know, we yeah. will always know and love mm-hmm. aside from the real estate of, you know, that building and that location. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of wonder, like, is there something else? Like, is it that he is an entrepreneur or Mia has other businesses? Is there another stream of income? Because they're living in a penthouse. They're living really lavishly. I don't know. Maybe owning several, I want to call it a massage, but it's not a massage.
It's chiropractic.
Yeah.
Sorry. Apologies to the world of massage and chiropractic. I think it's because my chiropractor is like a peace and love. He does give me a little bit of a massage moment. Wow. So I always associate the two, but they are very different. So I apologize, although I love a massage as well. What can I say?
Yeah.
But I just kind of wonder about that whole setup. Like, when did he shift into full time, like sort of taking care of the kids full time, and she was running the business side? And how much money is at stake? I don't know why. I'm always curious about the dollar signs, probably because we know so many of them are
fraud,
you know. Yeah, I mean, so much of it is fraud that at this point I'm like, ooh, she's the business boss.
Yeah.
But like, how much is that business worth? Yeah. You know, like how many millions?
I mean, he comes across as like an entrepreneur kind of guy. And I love him being a stay-at-home dad, because we don't see a lot of that on Housewives.
Mm-hmm. The scene of him FaceTiming her, and he was talking about like how the one kid misses face-to-face time with Mia.
Yes.
He just came across as like very sweet. I'm mostly like trust no men, but for some reason that scene got me.
No, I completely agree with you. I watched the way he communicated that to her, and he like the way that he even communicated, like, you know, you're responding in a way that's defensive, was so emotionally mature, and it felt like he was talking to her with a lot of care. Would she have appreciated if he had had the conversation with her later on? Maybe, but he was actually approaching it in the moment when she's saying, I cannot be there for this thing. And he's like, listen, I just want to make sure you're aware that this is like hurting the kiddo's feelings because he depends on this one-on-one moment and time with mom. And
yeah.
I thought that the way that he did that was really, I felt like with a lot of love. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah, that kid wants to be sitting in the front seat with mom, listening to Drops of Jupiter on the way to football practice, whatever. That is a very specific memory for me personally.
Wow.
Oh my God. Yeah, she's interesting casting to me because she is one of those housewives who does feel pretty performative. Mm-hmm. Like the texting of it all of, do I think had cameras not been there, she would have said, if you want to see me, call my secretary.
Yeah.
Do I think that would have happened? No. But am I enjoying her in this? Am I enjoying the performance? I am.
Yeah.
I really honestly am.
I mean, I think even when some of these bickerings between different castmates don't ring so true, I just like that it's happening because there's just so many things happening between different people where it's not just Karen and Giselle all season.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, with Mia, and I think like we're in a unique time where we're getting students of the Real Housewives who've been watching, and it's happening in different ways across all these cities, like with Ebony and Crystal too. So it's just like very interesting how it's playing out in Potomac.
Yeah.
I completely agree. And I also feel like, you know, there's something about being a performative housewife, and there's something about being like a mid-franchise performative housewife or a housewife who feels like she has earned her wings.
Yeah.
And, you know, Zen Wen came on this season with a bag of tricks. She came on with the most beautiful breasts I've ever seen in my entire life. Like her doctor, I mean, Wendy has always been beautiful, but like, yeah. She looks like she was sculpted into like this gorgeous Grecian step. I mean, A++. And when do we ever see good work? Right. Yeah. Like, shout out Vicky G. Like, this is phenomenal. But putting that aside, you know, Wendy has adjusted herself a little bit. And it's not because of the procedures. It feels like there is maybe a refresh to the kind of Wendy she wants to be, or right. maybe a comfort level. You know, there's so much stress associated with being a first-time, first-season housewife, and maybe she feels like, okay, I have some staying power now. Now I can make some changes, you know?
It's,
what are your thoughts?
It seems like it seems like the Google Doc with her plan for season two is a lot more thorough than her own business plan prepared got along. So I think
that's exactly it.
She's really thought this through, and I like to see it. I mean, like, she's coming a bit messy. She's a little bit villainy in some points, but we love Zen Wen.
Yeah. I can't get enough. I mean, like, I stand her so hard her first season.
Yeah.
And even though she's giving us a different flavor this season, I'm still team Zen Wen. I love her whole family. I love Eddie. I love the kids. I love the mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't get enough of her.
I think Eddie is like one of the greatest. Mm. I put him at Jonathan Schindler levels.
Okay. Yeah.
Great supportive partner.
Yeah.
Asking the right questions. Why are you spending all this money on fucking candles? Like, truly, mm-hmm. you need a second paragraph to that business plan. Like, what is happening? I just really think they seem very supportive of each other, truly. Like, aside from the, you know, at game night, don't you fucking dare write anything close to me right. on that fucking piece of paper, or else I will destroy you shortly thereafter. But aside from those moments, or maybe because of those moments, they just seem very comfortable with each other. And we've seen so many different marriage, spouse, sometimes partner, sometimes supportive models on Housewives that it's nice to see something that feels healthy for both of them, noting the fact that this is ironically going to be the relationship that's seemingly most under attack, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Wait, going back to game night 1 second, or game day or whatever.
game day.
Did anyone catch Ashley Darby on Watch What Happens Live last night, and Michael was behind the bar, mm-hmm. and they played the newlywed game, and the wife that Michael would pick is Giselle, which I found interesting.
And Ashley picked Giselle as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I am so behind on Watch What Happens. I'm just still stuck on the fact that Michael was the bartender.
Crazy. Yeah.
It was Ashley, and the other guest was Ryan O'Connell from Special. And Michael was behind the bar. Wild.
Do we really want him interacting with other show production teams?
I know.
Has he earned his stripes that way?
I know. Going back to that too, Ashley Darby.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful for her and how she puts it all out there and continues to put it all out there, even after like years and years of being burned by her husband.
Yeah.
Truly a team player.
I can't imagine. I mean, honestly, I was so proud of myself. I went for a walk and I actually put on makeup and I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. And I really thought about it. Truly. I went back and forth for a solid 45 minutes before I spent the 2 to 3 on like shellacking on some mascara and calling it a day. And I look at Ashley, who's so pregnant. Mm-hmm. She's like at her due date. I just think, how tired must this person be physically, emotionally, spiritually? She is cooking a child inside of her.
Yeah.
and dealing with the stress of filming. It's not like getting dressed to go to dinner, which I would think would be a huge undertaking in her state. And now she's doing it to film a reality TV show. You look at the little that has been given to us by so many, BCC New York. And then there's Ashley, who's 17 months pregnant and is going to film with her husband and then films immediately after her water has broken. I mean, my fucking God.
When she came to the reunion super pregnant, I was like, okay, they're probably going to let her give birth, pick up filming after. And then we tend to follow the filming stuff in, like in Come Through Queen to like know what's going to come, what's shaken. And then when we saw that Potomac was filming and she had not given birth yet, we were like, what the fuck is going on?
I know.
It's wild. I just want to, it's, she seems so dedicated and it's so interesting to watch her once again try to maneuver the narrative that all is well with Michael and he's so great, because like in these moments where she's like, you've been so supportive, she's not really saying that to him. She's saying that to us about him. He just happens to be there, you know, drinking his Corona, living his best life. And it's fascinating to watch that take place and then have him introduce the idea of going into entertainment as a business investment, which in the best of ways, he would lose money. And that would be the best thing to happen to them if something went down. Because I think of Michael as someone who probably was, God forbid, is like inspired by terrible things that have happened. Because he's so devoted to crossing boundaries with people who are not giving him any indicator that that is appropriate, acceptable, or appreciated. And now he wants to go to entertainment, which has historically been a world of people taking advantage of those who do not have or are trying desperately to hold on to their place.
Right.
And it's like, of course he would want to join that. Of course he looks at that and he's like, this is the next step. You know, like, this will be my new hobby.
Yeah. I mean, when they were having that conversation, I was thinking, oh, you need to go talk to Sonia Rita about movie production and how that cost her all the equity in her townhouse.
And her, she had a place in France. So we could have had a Bluestone Manor, but a French fucking chateau. And we lost it because of a contract with John Travolta that went
John
awry
Travolta's
because Sonia
at it again.
Wanted to be the one. I know. listen, I want to get your thoughts on something that we have all seen on social. But first, I have to say that this episode has been brought to you and me and all of us by Jeff Lewis Has Issues, a brand new podcast I am already obsessed with. You may know Jeff Lewis from the hit Bravo series Flipping Out or his SiriusXM radio show Jeff Lewis Live. And now Jeff is bringing you a brand new podcast we think you'll love called Jeff Lewis Has Issues. Guys, have you seen Flipping Out?
Oh, of course.
Yes, of course. Classic.
Favorite character.
I liked Jenny, and I know that. Is that bad to say during your ad read?
No, we all love Jenny. We love Jeff and Jenny together. Yeah. I have hope that they will be together once more.
Yeah.
I really do. Dan, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I mean, Zoila was the fan favorite, obviously. But yeah, I mean, that was an iconic piece in the Bravo cinematic universe.
And I also feel like the title of this podcast, Jeff Lewis Has Issues, is so spot on, not only for the life of Jeff, the narratives, the stories that we've seen play out, but because of his relationships with people. Like, my hope, I genuinely think if Shaw's can come back together the way it has this season after incredibly fractured friendships, I absolutely see a future with Jeff and Jenny. So fingers crossed, maybe that'll be a special episode. But whether it's drama with family and friends or parenting, relationships, there's no denying Jeff Lewis Has Issues. Jeff is joined each week by friends, experts, and celebs from Tamra Judge and Jackie Schimmel to Judge Lauren Lake, Patty Stanger, and others as they take a no-holds-barred deep dive into every detail of Jeff's life. Come for the laughs and leave feeling so much better about your own life. God knows I will. Check out Jeff Lewis's Issues. You can subscribe now on Stitcher, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite pod. Thanks, Jeff Lewis Has Issues, for sponsoring this episode. I mean, talk about come through. Come through, Jeff. I do want to talk about someone who has an issue here or there. According to some photos that we saw released on social and the greater www dot, thanks to Page Six, Tom Girardi looking svelte, I don't know, aged.
Yeah. I mean, I do think when you get to that age, things can quickly take a turn when you're like, when you least expect it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I Ryan Bailey posted a meme that was so funny that I'm 100% gonna completely fuck up, but it was something along the lines of like, and now we know this is what Tom looks like when he actually drives off a cliff, which is like,
oh my God.
Listen, it's a burn. It's a burn. And I don't want to be like, wow, he looks terrible. Poor guy. Yeah. Because, but I, and I also don't want to be like, let's just completely light this man on fire.
Yeah.
But I genuinely, my instinct when I saw those photos was like, wow, he looks different. All right. Well, I hope he's able to hang around so that he can actually spend some time in prison for all of the people that he violated and defrauded. Like, I'm not wishing him the worst.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm just hoping that he is with us in whatever form for long enough to be held accountable.
And so that some of those victims get some, a little bit of justice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And not to compare him with Harvey Weinstein, but we have seen men in great positions of power who are arrested, attempt to be held accountable. You know, Harvey, obviously, in a much different circumstance, but was like showing up to court with a walker and a the tennis ball. He had props. There were things happening so that he could look as feeble as possible, which is not to say that's what's happening with Tom, but it is to say that regardless of whatever state he's in now, he was not in that state for the many, many years that he was lying and defrauding his clients while telling them over the phone that he's such a nice guy and like systematically exploiting them.
Yeah, we saw him on an episode last season and he seemed great.
Yeah.
By great, I mean, he seemed like to be in a good place personally or whatever. Because he was in the middle of defrauding.
Oh my God.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, maybe that was holding him up. Like, maybe all the stealing and the lying and the deception and the extreme manipulation and the ability to hide his many, many crimes because of his access to all the judges and bar associations and state friends and whatever else he was able to do to sustain this for so long, maybe that was helping him in some way. And when that's taken away, you know, he was Mr. Lawyer, he was Aaron Brockovich. When that is taken away from you, when it all comes tumbling down, it wouldn't be surprising to me that that could potentially, if this is regardless of what it actually is, if that could speed up something else.
Yeah.
Like, you do hear of people who work their entire lives, you know, retire or forced to retire, and then it's game over because that was how they identified. I just think it's fascinating when the ways that you looked at yourself versus how you actually behaved are in such polar opposition that, like, what happens when your body starts going, your body and or mind start going to shit because now we know of all the shit you were doing when you seemed fine and well.
Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of Aaron Brockovich, I would love to know what Julia Roberts thinks about this because I feel like with her niece being Emma Roberts, I feel like Emma Roberts probably Emma Roberts probably watches these shows, so is maybe keeping Julia informed on the text chain about what's going on.
Are Emma and Julia close? Do we know that?
I saw a photo of them like playing backgammon recently, and by recently I mean like a year or two ago.
Okay.
I'm very much into that vibe. I'd also, I feel like maybe Julia would watch Housewives.
Yeah,
I feel like maybe she, okay. Beverly Hills would actually be the franchise. I don't see her as an Orange County person. I actually don't see her as a New York person. Definitely not Jersey. I could see her, though, as BH. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's entirely possible. Sure. Does anybody know what Erin Brockovich has said about Tom?
I don't know what she said recently, but I know that she was still close with the firm up until recently.
Oh.
I feel like I heard some stories about when they hired like Leanne Rimes for a Christmas party recently.
Erin
Brockovich was like mentioned in like the story about the party. So I think she's been in the mix with the firm all these years.
Yeah. She gets invites.
She's obviously working for the firm.
She at least gets invites to the holiday parties.
Yeah. So she's like in their close contacts of like people they're still in touch with.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Erin Brockovich is involved in any of this.
No.
I mean, from an involvement perspective, how do you feel about the ways that Erica has portrayed, discussed, unpacked the dissolution of her marriage to Tom? You know, certainly last episode was giving us an awful lot.
Right. The thing for me is that throughout all this, even up until now on like social media, she has showed like not a bit of remorse to the victims of all this. And I understand like she feels potentially like a victim herself as the wife, but you can do a two-prong messaging approach and sorry to the victims first and then sorry to myself second, you know, if like you have nothing to do with this. That's my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I it's terrible that she is not expressing that, but I wonder how much she is being told that she cannot in order to save herself.
But she's acting up. On
I know
social.
She's acting up.
That's
yeah.
The thing.
Yeah.
It's like, to me, I have heard that defense. I mean, Brian has written about it in his recaps of Beverly Hills that like perhaps the reason that she is not, I think he has, mm-hmm. I might be fucking this up, but like perhaps the reason that Erica has not expressed contrition specific to that on camera is due to some sort of legal reasoning. But then I think exactly what Brendan does, which is like, if she was listening to her lawyers about that, but not about her behavior online, then there's a real problem with Erica, because her ability to completely cast aside the actual faces and names of the people who were irreparably harmed by her husband's criminal behavior in order to, at least in some ways, pay for the shoes, pay for Mikey, pay for whatever else. And you're online gallivanting and telling people to shut the fuck up and like just being an awful lot. I don't know what the harm is in saying, gosh, I feel so terribly for the people involved versus you guys can all shut the fuck up in a tweet.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that those equal each other. Mm-hmm. And from the perspective of like liability, I don't know that expressing sadness, not even remorse or contrition, but just sadness about what has happened to these people is crossing a line that being nasty on social is not.
Right.
I don't see like what is the point to her being online right now. Like we know what the point of her being on the show is, to get a check, but being online is not getting her a check. It's not like she's doing sponsored content or anything. So why not just be offline?
But I think like maybe in her brain, like being relevant is the most important thing and being famous is the most important thing, because that will eventually get her a check and someday. But who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a wild process, because I do think in order to not completely go insane when you are in the middle of this like never ending press, tabloid, Bravo community frenzy, where a lot of people are saying you knew all of this. I mean, sidebar, a lot of unanswered questions about the like $20 million loan. Mm-hmm. And there are things that people have legitimate questions and concerns about, but about the fact that, you know, Tom gave her like a $20 million loan to her company that she was like the president and I don't know what the fuck. But there are questions of things that are like, are you not wondering why this is happening, and how do you think of it now that we know so much more than you maybe did then? But regardless, it feels like a defense mechanism or survival instinct when a lot of people are trying to hold you accountable with legitimate concerns, and a lot of people are saying, I hope you die. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You are the devil. You are the absolute worst person. Maybe the processing mechanism is to put all of that in the bucket of troll so that you don't have to acknowledge anything else, which to me means, okay, well, that's the way that she's going to process it. Maybe that has something to do with the character she's portraying online too, but that also means it's very important that the cast isn't only the Fox Force 5, because they're going to be lobbing the most delicate balls at her that they possibly can.
Yeah.
It's why it's so important that there are people like Sutton there who are saying truly, like, no big deal stuff. The line from Sutton, if I remember this correctly, in the midst, is like her being like, maybe we were misled. Something along. And that is what lit a fire under Erica's ass. Imagine if it was someone else saying, maybe Erica Jane misled, you know, putting more specificity there. Maybe that will happen next season, but I would think it would be a very different environment, one that she could not ignore or just simply lose her mind over.
Yeah.
If I'm a member of the Fox Force 5 right now, I don't know why, like, if it were me, I would not be still eggs in eggs in the Erica basket. I would take my eggs away, you know?
Yeah, take the eggs.
But okay, let's talk about that. What is the risk involved in staying, it's so weird to say friends, because it's so obvious that Erica's version of friendship has absolutely nothing to do with, like, real stakes and vulnerability or truth or honesty, which is where I would lose my mind. But from the perspective of Teddy, who we don't care about, cause she's no longer here, and was she ever, but from the perspective of Kyle, Rinna, Dorit, and Teddy and Erica, from the perspective of the remaining three plus Erica, what is in it for them if they distance themselves from her and maybe each other? Like, genuinely, what benefit does that serve?
Do you think they are all actually friends? Obviously, I think Teddy and Kyle are friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Dorit and Kyle seem to have become closer friends over the past 2 years. But, like, is Erica actually friends with any of them? Or are they just, like, show friends?
Allies?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think an ally is probably the strongest, truest form. But as we have seen, like, I don't know what friendship is to Erica.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know.
I think they're allies, not in the gay way. They're allies in, like, the war way, because there is a difference.
I mean, I think probably many, I might be just imagining this, but I would think many of Erica's friends were employees.
Yeah.
Mikey.
Yeah.
Layla.
Yeah.
I keep fucking up her name.
And then the other kind of friend, it seemed to be people who Tom knew through lawyering about.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting to me that, like, Erica, you know, came onto the show as like, yeah, I snack, like, whatever. I love an appetizer. Like, I'm shooting this shit. I'm like, I got all this money, but I'm still funny. I'm still got whatever. Mm-hmm. And then she morphed into Erica Jane, who is very dry, but maybe lost some of her humor throughout the process of morphing into Erica Jane full time and in her, you know, celebrity and success with Beverly Hills. And it's like, I wonder what kind of friend Erica is to the other women if she's not sharing any kind of, if she is defensive in all of the ways that she has expressed until literally last week or the week prior.
Right.
How does that change the state of affairs in the friendships that she has with these women on and off camera? Because is she really showing that she cares these women by disclosing this information that we all understand is happening to hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who are watching the show and reading about this. If I was one of her friends, I would be like, okay, well, she's getting a divorce, so now she feels like she doesn't have to keep the confidences of her husband and the power imbalance, whatever else. Mm-hmm. But also, like, what if there's a vested interest that she has in sharing all of this? Is my expression of empathy or sympathy just kind of a part of that picture? You know, like, how do you, as a friend to someone who has been revealed to be a participant or witness or victim, however mm-hmm. you look at this dynamic, of a huge criminal enterprise, which is sort of what we're looking at with the Tom of it all, like, and she's now sharing this stuff. Is it because she has hit such bottom that she has no choice but to share, or she's mm-hmm. feeling freedom through all the constraints, or am I a part of her strategy to get out of all of this, you know?
I think she, at this point that we're watching, Erica herself started to see the writing on the wall that things are about to get bad, which is why mm-hmm. she's revealing all this stuff, which is why she's talking about the other women, which is why she posted that thing on Instagram back in, what, November, about with the screenshots mm-hmm. of,
oh my God,
like,
Nokia.
Doxing that judge mm-hmm. who allegedly had an affair with Tom. So I think she's kind of just, like, doing everything she can right now to make herself not look bad. And that is, like, also, like, the car story. And, like, we previously heard the car story and it didn't seem as serious as now. He drove off a cliff? Mm. Wouldn't you be, if you were friends with someone, wouldn't you tell them that your husband just drove off a cliff and I need help? Like, it's wild.
I also think, like, who is supporting her aside from her employees? I guess that's where you put, this is what happens when you hire your friends yeah. or you make your employees into friends. Like, mm-hmm. he broke his clavicle. I think he broke ribs. He broke his ankle. Mm-hmm. And she's talking on camera about how he's now a baby, but he was also unconscious for 12 hours or whatever. That's a serious injury. I understand him potentially being like, don't you dare tell a single person because I've got crimes to commit and my cal is full. So, like, I don't want you to tell anybody anything because my career and access to bank accounts means literally everything to me. But mm-hmm. I just can't imagine processing your husband driving off of a something and landing somewhere and finding him or not,
right?
But seemingly him having serious injuries and not wanting to tell anyone, and then presenting that as information in this larger narrative. If I was any one of those women hearing this, I would have so many follow-up questions. And yet I also know this is a woman under enormous stress right now. So maybe those don't get asked then, mm-hmm. but I would think eventually someone would be like, hey, yeah, like, what kind of friends are we now? Right. You know, we need a new friendship contract, one your husband has not drafted. Mm-hmm. Like, we need an understanding of the ways that we are going to help each other, which also means telling you the truth.
Yeah. I guess in my fantasy, I don't even think that far because I don't picture them as friends. Like, I picture them as coworkers, you know?
Mm-hmm. But I feel like I have so many coworkers who I'm even I'm closer than these women trying to be trying to pretend to be friends.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I have coworkers back when I had a job who know the ins and outs of dating stuff where yeah. I was like, just one second, let me just tell you about this guy and this thing that happened at like 3 a.m. Hold on one second, we'll get on that call in a minute. So anyway, you know, like I have when I was dealing with health challenges, they knew I would have doctors mm-hmm. call, you know, like, and family stuff. I just feel like when you develop a relationship with someone and you care about that person, you care about what's going on in their life. And as they knew stuff about me, I knew stuff about them. And it was important to support each other, especially when emergencies happen. You know, it's
right.
Life is so short. Why would you want to
Yeah. Not to give PK kind of any credit in anything, but when he said that Erica's inherently cold, maybe he had a point.
I mean, there are ways that I watched Giselle this week where she's like, I'm just kind of emotionally cold, but I'm working on it. And she's talking about dealing with her children. Mm-hmm. And then we look at Erica and it's like, yeah. And that could, again, be a survival instinct. That could also be a part of her personality. Mm-hmm. I don't think of the sharing stuff as like crossing boundaries. Well, I have established boundaries with people where I'm like, you're actually sharing too much with me. But with people that you become friends with, you decide how your relationship is going to exist inside and outside of the work environment. And I would think it is an entirely different matter when you're filming a reality TV show, especially one where conflict is the honorary cast member. Mm-hmm. And maybe you say, you know, like, gloves are off during filming. That seems to be Rinna's style. And then once we're done or the new season begins, there may or may not be a little bit of a reset. But when it comes to Erica, I just can't, I don't know. I don't know what that makes me, but I really put a lot of trust in the people that I have in like my inner circle. Mm-hmm. And I look at myself as the kind of friend who is there to support regardless of whether you are asking me to do so. And if I was finding out all of this information within or very soon after the context of finding out this man who had been positioned in a certain way was a liar,
right,
and a thief, I think I would feel a certain way and have the right to feel some amount of betrayal to her. He is a monster. So it's like he can go fuck himself. He doesn't owe me anything, just as I don't owe him anything, because the person he should apologize to isn't me. It's like all of the people who lost all of their life savings and like, you know, sense of hope. Mm-hmm. But from an Erica perspective, I mean, I wouldn't feel great.
I think Erica, like, just doesn't have any real friends.
Yeah.
Like,
she has the right to be lonely, I guess.
And it sounds like she has said how she has gotten support from her son. Like, their relationship has grown closer, I think. Didn't she mention that in a confessional, maybe? I don't know. And doesn't she have a mom, too, in Georgia?
In Georgia, yeah.
So I wonder if, like, those two people might have a bigger role in her life. And obviously, she doesn't show the son at all. And we only briefly met the mom. So they might be bigger figures in her life than friends, really? I don't know.
I mean, listen, if I was her son or her mom and her son works in...
He's a cop.
Yeah.
He's a cop. Erica didn't want to show her son on camera until, or in a photo until she did so on social at some point during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And the reason that she did so is because she said she didn't want to put him into any sense of danger, you know, working as a cop in LA as he does. I have nothing but respect for that decision. She has every right to do so. And I am in no position to judge someone for wanting to make sure her son has privacy for reasons having to do with his health and safety. That being said, how much danger did you put your son in by associating with this man for several years, who it turns out is a fucking criminal? Mm. Like, what's worse, showing your son having breakfast at your breakfast nook, or him finding out, as all of his colleagues do in the entire country, that his stepfather is a fucking crook?
Yeah.
The breakfast nook is worse. Just kidding. Just kidding.
I wonder if part of the reason the son never shows up is also what if he knew like how not good their relationship was? So he didn't want to be like an actor. Like,
he's also living on campus.
Yeah, exactly. He's living on campus.
Where is his, like, I wonder where his new place is, because he's not in the third bedroom because that's full of shoes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Wait, where does he, because he moved out at some point of their estate. Was that before or after the news broke?
I thought he lived there until recently when she moved out.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
So I wonder, I mean, like, talk about the fact that she talks about how good of a supportive figure Tom was in her young son's life when they got together. And it's like, I wonder what that dynamic is now, because it's not that your son is a fellow, which would be a different kind of betrayal if her son was a lawyer. It's not that her son is a businessman, which would also, there's so, any way you look at it, it's a betrayal. If he was a businessman, I would think it would be a form of betrayal. But her son works in law enforcement and he was doing this shit. Like, what? How does that work? How do you work yourself out of that?
I don't necessarily feel bad for the son as much as I do the victims of the plane crash or whatever. But yeah, it's an interesting way to think about it. Like, what are the dynamics between Tom and the son these days, if anything? Or do they even have like as good of a relationship as we've been told? With Erica, everything is like,
who knows,
smoke and mirrors. Yeah. So it's like, it's her narrative, what she decides to share, and that's that. But we're learning that things weren't perfect behind the scenes, so... But I don't think she's ever going to be like truly honest with us. Mm-hmm. Not that any of these women are, but her especially. She's like the least honest.
Is there any possibility that she'll come out of this more honest than ever? Where it's like she has no, she has nothing left to give but truth?
To me, the moment of truth is the reunion. Does she show up?
Mm. Yeah.
Like that's going to be a turning point, I would say.
I mean, Dorit said 100% she'll be there. There's no, Erica cannot afford to not attend every mandated anything, especially when there are financial liabilities associated with not being there.
Yeah.
She's, and I'm sure there's a conversation with her legal teams and Bravo and the network as far as like, you cannot go near this or you can ask me this and know that I'm going to tell you I can't discuss it, and then figure out a way to balance all of this, because she is, her negotiating power next season is going to be wild, because she brings an awful lot of story in terms of this being on the public's greater interest in what is happening and how this all turns out. Mm-hmm. But also she can't be like, you need to pay me more. Like, what? No, she's going to, the counter would be like, here's a nickel, you right. know, because like, we know you need it. So what are you, how is that negosh going to go?
I know. And it's not like she can get a lot of other streams of income, because just like everything around her is so bad. Like she can't do Shoe Dazzle again, because is Shoe Dazzle going to want like Erica Jane fraud money shoes or whatever?
I don't know how this is going to turn out. The only thing that I do feel fairly confident in, which means I'm probably going to be 100% wrong, is that she's not going anywhere anytime soon. And it does help her that, to state most obviously, she's not being charged with anything. Mm. She had rather, let me rephrase that, she has not yet been charged with anything.
Mm-hmm.
She, and so the level of suspicion that people have, or the level of absolute that people have over her involvement or knowledge, is so TBD and so unknown, as it likely will stay. I just think that she is gonna be here for a while, regardless of whether or not she wants it, and she may well really want it, because it's maybe the only thing that she has left. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the only thing that makes her different though to me than like Teresa or even like Jen Shaw right now is we know the faces of the victims of the firm. Mm-hmm. Like we watched the documentary with the other Kim and Kathy. I don't know if you noticed that. Kim and Kathy, the two women.
Yeah.
But so we know their faces, which is different than like, we don't know who was negatively impacted by Teresa and Joe. And we haven't heard yet about who was impacted by Jen Shaw, though I do feel like there could be a documentary in the mix there.
Mm.
How could there not be?
Right.
Well, with Teresa, it was like the bank. The financial system.
Nobody likes the bank. Fuck the bank.
It was like the bank or Melania, like, who are you more sympathetic towards, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess Teresa's like very Robin Hood in that way.
Oh my God, wow.
I'm just kidding.
I mean, it turns out maybe Joe was poor. So yeah, she's stealing from the rich and giving to probably some canceled checks or whatever. Wow. Just kidding. They pay in cash. And, you know, pivoting just a little bit, the greater conversation around the shows currently airing are something along the lines of like Potomac is prestige spiritually and otherwise.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills is having a Renaissance style season where Erica's whatever one could argue is in the top three stories happening right now. It's not just like it's Erica and only Erica. So there's a lot happening and people seem pretty happy with what's going on in New York and Beverly Hills. And I'm sorry. Oh my God. In Potomac and Beverly Hills. And then we have New York. How do you feel about this season so far?
I think we don't mind it as much as some people.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my God. I'm so fucking glad I am.
I think there's like this weird hive mind among like all the Bravo accounts. It's like Roni is over. It's dead. Bury it. Don't exhume it ever. Like we're done. And I think me and Dan are like, yeah, it's like we definitely need more women in the mix. Yeah. We're not, there's not enough storylines just because of the like makeup of the cast. The cast is small and they also don't have a lot of like family stuff going on like we see in other cities, which
besides
is
besides people dying.
Yeah, besides people dying.
Yeah.
That being said, I have felt like the most recent episode, there's interesting things and new things happening that I'm getting a little more excited about. Like the Leah versus Luann and like the Christmas song thing I thought was a little more interesting. I just wish they keep on rejecting other women coming in. So like when Heather Holla Thompson came in, they're like, no, we don't want you. Like the cast is saying bye. And then they tried to do that with Bershawn, but it's like, just, we just need more bodies in the room to film is what it needs.
Who told them they had the right to say no?
Right. Exactly.
Like, you need to replace that energy with something else. Your energy can't only be, we are better than you, or we don't want to do this when, because when that happens, when you get what you want, we lose everything. I mean, I don't know. Is the greater conversation that the show is over, or is it that this season is terrible?
It feels like week to week people are like, it's the worst thing in the world. And I'm like, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's just like, it's not as fun as it was like two seasons
ago. Yeah. What doesn't make sense to me, and I could forgive them for last season because Bethany apparently quit like the day before filming started.
They found out online.
So, so they couldn't shift the money around, send out new contracts to women, blah, blah, blah. What, like, where's the Bethany money going to right now? You know?
Right.
Like, we should be funding, like, several low-paid first season housewives because they only get, like, they get below six figures for their first season. So, like, let's do another eight-woman cast like we did that crazy season, like, seven or whatever it was.
Also, New York is so diverse, and I mean that also in terms of money. Like, where is the Brooklyn, oh my God, what was the name of that fucking terrible, weird woman cult where everything was millennial pink? Where is the weird WeWork for women who have lots of cash and God bless them? But, like, where is the go-getter, baller, lady entrepreneur who maybe has had 10 years past her great, enormous success and she's looking for something fun? Like, where are the moms in Brooklyn or non-moms in somewhere downtown or a new kind of Tinsley?
Right.
There are women who I think would be more than happy to do this show, especially if they're pissed that their kids are like super famous on TikTok or something,
right,
who want to reestablish the power structure. Where are those people? Because I feel like casting is veering way, 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 way left.
Where is Allison Roman? As you may know, she revealed on Pet Shop Boys podcast that she was approached by casting.
Wait, Allison Roman?
The chef.
Like am I thinking New York?
The chef, yes.
The one that Chrissy Teigen canceled and now has been uncanceled by the canceling of Chrissy Teigen.
What? When was she approached?
Like
Before or after?
It's
the Tegan.
It's unclear of the timeline. It sounds like it might have been after the Tegan canceling, but.
And she said what? And what was her response?
I think she said no. Well, she doesn't watch Housewives, so she doesn't even like know. I mean,
no, I don't want that.
I
don't want someone who's too cool for school. I need you to
know. But she, I think, could have brought something interesting to the franchise.
Yeah, and now
dinner.
Yeah, dinner.
And now I feel like it'll less be a storyline. We're 10 years later from like Manhattan versus Brooklyn, and now. Now that I've moved to Brooklyn, it's a little more acceptable. Just kidding.
Well, I mean, Brooklyn is super cool. I mean, like, let's keep it real. Brooklyn is, like, very cool. Yeah.
And there's fucking money. There's a lot of money.
Cobble Hill is, like, so much. You trip and land on a bajillion dollar whatever. Like, it's, they have so much money that, much more money than, like, living in... I don't know, wherever downtown.
Yeah. Right.
It just feels like we're really missing out, and that energy is needed. The OG energy, I'm sorry, it's currently, to me, tanking the ship. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. I'm really not. I'm not sorry. Ramona and, to some extent, Luann are dragging this shit fucking down for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just personally, selfishly. I want some new... faces and relationships in here and figure out what the fuck to do with Leah.
Well, like, speaking of fraud, it's like with not fraud, like actually legally, but like Luann moves to a new apartment that she gets in the city for the 6 months of filming every single year. Mm. And nobody wants to talk about how she doesn't actually live in New York City. She is a Sag Harbor gal, and that's great. And she's always getting new apartment. It's like, it's kind of frustrating.
Well, Sag Harbor's closer than the distance that all the Potomac wives live from each other. They are hours apart.
That is true. That is true.
I mean, but at least we know where they live. Yeah, Luann stuff is interesting, especially because Dorinda's trigger was the fact that Tinsley was only in New York to film and otherwise lived in Palm Beach / West Palm. You know, like, that was one of her many complaints against Tinsley. Mm. But if Luann is doing the same thing, but I guess has more power... Yeah. That's always an interesting dynamic as well.
Sarah, do you want Dorinda back or no?
100%. Absolutely. Okay. But the problem is that they said she was on a pause and nobody explicitly told her, or maybe they did and she just didn't agree to it, what it means to be on pause when you're getting the exact same critique, which is like, you need to maybe dry out or work on your anger. Mm. They're connected, but you can't really fix one without the other or grow from this. And I don't think, based on her behavior and her responses to press stuff and whatever else since this happened, I don't think she has had any interest in that, which is why the language, I think, about pause was more for us than for her, because I think ultimately they're going to need to make a decision. And my guess is that she's gotten additional power because of the response to this season, where they're going to have to decide to themselves, okay, you know, we said we were putting her on pause because we needed her to work on some stuff. What happens if we really need her and she has done absolutely nothing of what we hoped she would do?
Yeah.
I think what's going to happen, and maybe this is just my fantasy, I think we are going to see her and Bethany coming back, locking arms.
That's your fantasy.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like the reality, it seems like there's more buzz about a Tinsley return, like a post-Scott, let's get back in... arm in arm with Leah, go to what's his face in the boxing ring and like box it out. I feel like that's more believable to me right now than Dorinda coming back, sadly, even though I miss her, but I don't think she has recovered from where she was at emotionally.
Yeah. Yeah.
They might not need her to anymore. They might decide that the value she brings regardless is too great. To force upon her or broach the idea that there is a problem here and it doesn't have long-term staying power without it. Maybe they thought that by putting her on pause, she could remain someone who might have a longer future on there than what she will end up happening, because she does not seem to be as interested in what it may take to unpause oneself prior to this season beginning to air.
Right.
Yeah.
We shall see.
I mean, we shall see. I just want to get your closing thoughts. I mean, I do have to ask you about Leah because she is seemingly a trigger for some people, a longer discussion for others. She's having a bit of a season, I guess, is the way that one could call that, whatever she's currently going through. How are you watching her friendship with Ebony play out? And, you know, if you were to have a conversation with Leah, what would the framework be for that talk?
Interesting. So I'm two minds with Leah. I like her friendship with Ebony. I'm glad that Ebony has somebody on the cast to, like, actually talk to normally. But if I were to say to Leah, I would say, you are breaking the number one rule of improv by constantly saying no. She did it with Heather Halla. Yeah. She's, like, doing it at every turn. It, like, when she decided the episode, I think this is what was the turning point in the season for everyone, where we're like, oh, we're in a bad place. The episode where she decided to take a vow of silence during a full day of filming, it's like, that is not the point of being on this show. Mm-hmm. Let's say yes and make some fucking TV, please.
Yeah, I'm of the mind that I, you know, don't agree with a lot of her opinions or positions, but I find her just, like, watchable and compelling. So I don't see, I don't need to like all my housewives as people.
Absolutely.
So, like, the fact that I don't want to, like, hang out or like agree with everything she's saying, like, doesn't mean I want her off the show. I think, like, there could be people that I find interesting to watch that make the show work. So I don't know.
Okay, can I do something super unfair, but I'm the devil, so here we go. If I name a housewife, can you tell me whether or not you want them on next season, specific to New York?
Because again,
I am the Antichrist. Yeah. Leah, do you want her on or no?
Yeah.
Okay. Ebony.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bershon.
Maybe.
I feel like we need to see more, but for me, I'm like, if that's who we're going to get, we need more bodies.
Yeah.
True. Luann.
Yeah.
Okay. Ramona.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, from you
both. I think so.
More bodies. More bodies.
Yeah, more. Yes, and. We're yes anding everyone.
And if we're like bringing old people back, I feel like it's important to have Ramona in the mix because of her history on the show.
Because of her history with Tinsley?
And whoever. If it's Bethany and Dorinda coming arm to arm. Yeah.
Well, okay. So right now we have five cast members plus Bershon, right?
Right.
So Bershon's up in the air right now. So that means we have five. Let's bring at least one person back and two brand new people.
I think those are great suggestions. I think that a part of the yes anding when it comes to casting, though, or the issue of having too few women is also the issue of who are the women who are too few. Because in some areas, in some franchises, you may have too few women, but the women that you have are really strong. If someone is potentially bringing down the ship or is just not giving us what we need or has maybe been there too long, we can always respect her history as an OG, but I think sometimes one of the best ways to add to the show is to remove whomever is, like, the weakest link. And for me, the weakest link, having nothing to do with her, like, politics, but also everything to do with her character and how she behaves on camera or lack thereof, or only in the worst ways. I, from an instincts perspective, if, like, yes and is the you know, lesson we should all learn, I feel like the yes and with Ramona is, like, yes, get rid of her and bring in someone new.
So,
I mean, I'm not married to her saying, but
I think...
No, I hear you. It's also Ramona, so it's really tough to talk about because I think some people like to say, yeah, get the fuck rid of her, but then you might miss her. You really, really might miss her when she's gone.
So for me, one of the big moments of the season was the seance and the stuff with Ramona and Sonia. I was like, I can't believe I am seeing this play out after, you know, 13 years with Ramona.
That's a great point.
11 years with Sonia.
I brought the I bought the brother's book. Ramona's brother who came to her in the seance has a book called Aspen, Snow, Blow, and Bow, a true story by Bodin Mazur. I bought it. I'm holding it up for those.
Brendan is holding it up. What is it about?
It's about snow? Aspen, snow, blow, and bow.
He was a ski bum who lived this like carefree life selling drugs. So like here's this whole thing about in Ramona's life that we don't even know about, and then just came to us in a
I've done deep dives on all the siblings, like their Facebooks. There's the two sisters, the one that we saw on the show. Then there's the other one who's never been on the show. Her Facebook, most of it's public. I forget her first name.
Sonia.
But it's an easy Google. Oh, yeah, it's Sonia. Her sister's name is Sonia.
Which is like a whole nother layer. Like Sonia Morgan is her sister, but she actually has a Sonia already.
Wow, that's super dark when you think about that.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
Brendan, I'm so excited for you to tell me all about that book once.
I know. I need to get into it. I have like a stack of books that I need to get through, but.
Can you do me a favor? Just open a random page and give me two sentences.
Sure.
Well, just while he looks at the page, reading the reviews, like one of the reviews are like, this is such a poorly written book. It's like spelling grammar errors. Yeah.
It runs in the family. When I did like a little AG book club with Ramona's book, and my favorite day was turning the page. And I like said this on an episode of AG, like, I'm just going to turn a page and read it. And the sentence was like, look at my very fit body or something with a photo of her in a bikini. Like, not exactly Hemingway, but maybe. I don't know. I'm going to tell you.
I found a paragraph about Ramona, which I think, okay. So Ramona was popular and always on the phone with someone in her clique. Because of that, our mother insisted our father get another phone line with a separate number just for Ramona. It was located in her private bedroom, which was in the biggest, newest house on Reservoir Road. She could look out her bedroom window, see the Hudson River, and watch the sunset as it dipped behind the Catskill Mountains. She was royalty in our house.
Wow.
Wow. Very different from Ramona's recollection.
Huh. Right. He did, when he was still alive, he did drag her in the press a little bit, if you want to Google that. It's a long, dark K-hole of this family. Yikes.
Oh, Mike. Well, that's something to look forward to. Yes. I know what I'm doing later tonight. Can you give a little bit of insight into how people can listen to, subscribe to Come Through Queen, follow you guys online? Give us the deets. Give us the info.
So it's a one-stop shop. You just go to comethroughqueen.com. Mm. You got links to Spotify, Apple, whichever you prefer, our socials, individual, plus the social for the account, the podcast as well. So yeah, just like one-stop shop, comethroughqueen.com.
Yeah.
Love it. And it's through THRU. Correct. So guys, Come Through Queen. You must listen to it ASAP. As soon as you're done with this episode, after you rate Annie's Girls podcast. And speaking of five stars, guys, the Annie's Girls Summer Zoom Winter Charm. Andy's Girls Patreon.
Oh my
Zoom
God.
I know, right? What a name. I'm the only person that actually genuinely liked that name. Oh. Everyone else, including Andy, was like, this is the worst name. And I, to this day, still enjoy it. I think it's really funny. So you can rake me over the coals for that in the upcoming Andy's Girls Patreon Zoom Kiki. It will be this coming Sunday, August 8th at 5 p.m. Eastern. Come for the delight. Talk to me. Talk to each other. And also, you know, it's exclusive to the Patreon supporters at the OG of the AG and People's People's Couch level. Join the Andy's Girls Patreon. You get info and invites on two exclusive events, including that one, and bonus episodes. There are two bonus episodes that just went up. One in which I unpack many, many satchels of gold about all things Erica and Tom, and another with a bonus episode with recent Andy's Girls classic guest Ryan Houlihan.
Nice.
We talk an awful lot about New York and Leah and Sonia and so much else. And while you're online, follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley because, you know, it's a lot of fun. And I'm not just saying that because I'm the dame behind the account, but do that. That'd be great. And some exciting news is coming up. So you are going to want to follow me on social for that. Trust me. Guys, thank you so much for coming on.
Of course.
Thank you.
It was so, and Dan, your first time on, it was so delightful to talk to you both together. I would love to do this again soon. I just think you guys are so smart and so thoughtful in how you watch and talk about Housewives, and we need more of that in the world. So I'm thankful for the energy you both bring to the discourse because I think it makes all of us be a whole lot better. So
thank you.
That's so sweet.
Me and Erica, just the two of us. Guys, I hope you are staying safe, staying sane, getting vaccinated if you can, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Bye.